Welcome back. I'm John Papa. This is Dan Wahlein. We're here to talk about module number one, where we're migrating a Windows Form application to Silverlight. In exercise one, we talked about different projects in the solution, the models, the services, and the WinForms application.
Right.
Module two, we talked about the, what did we talk about? We talked about the UI, moving WinForms over to Silverlight.
Pretty much that.
It's making all the analogies over there with the XAML, basically.
Right.
And in module three, we're actually going to hook up the application and make it use the web services and the models to make it functional.
That's right. So in exercise one, we showed the Windows Form app. And that Windows Form app, as I walked through the projects, we talked about how there's a WCF service sitting here. And we can go ahead and actually pull that test page up for the service and make sure it's all running. So you can see that here. And just like with Windows Forms, we can call WCF or Azimax or whatever, you know, service you like.
Right.
We're going to do the same thing with this guy right here. So first thing you want to do, of course, when you call a service is, if you've already done the Windows Forms, you've already know how to run through the wizard and create a proxy. So we're
right.
going to create a proxy. So let's go ahead and we'll do that. So our customer service project, that is our Silverlight one, is right here. So we're going to do just like you would with ASP.NET or Windows Forms. And we're going to right-click and we're going to say Add Service Reference. Now, because this is in the same solution, you know, I don't have to type it out. We can kind of do the nice little discover feature.
Or you could type the address in if you weren't in the same solution.
If you weren't, that's right. And we'll go ahead and you can see it there.
And it's always a good idea. I noticed some people stop before they expand all this. It's nice to actually expand it to make sure you're seeing the interface that you intend to see.
I've oftentimes found if the server, especially if it's in the same project, if it's not running, which is why I ran it first, you'll drill down, then you'll get an error right here because
right.
the server wasn't running. So, yeah, I agree with you. So we're going to call this customerservice.proxies. And that is our namespace. And so let me go ahead and I'm just going to copy that because we're going to reuse it. Now, while we're in here, I want to point out one kind of little tidbit on the advanced. So first off, you'll notice the asynchronous operations is grayed out.
It's checked and grayed out.
Yeah. And checked, yeah. And the reason for that, you only have one option in Silverlight, which is asynchronous.
Right.
Windows Forms, you can do both ways. Silverlight, we don't want to lock up the browser, so mm-hmm. it's asynchronous. You'll also notice that the collection type of any collections that are returned from the service definition are going to be automatically made into this special type of collection in Silverlight called an observable collection.
So if you return like a list from your web service, it's going to automatically convert on the client side to an observable collection.
That's right. That's what it'll actually generate. And you can switch that. List is even an option in here, but I would recommend, as I'm sure you would, just leave the defaults.
Right.
Because this is a kind of type, special type of monitored collection.
And we'll talk more about that in the data binding
module. Data binding, that's right. So anyway, I want to point that out real quick because that's a little bit different. But other than that, once you have your namespace in there, we can hit OK. And that'll go ahead and generate the proxy for us. Now, I want to bind the customer combo box here, customer's combo box, to the collection. And back in exercise one, we looked really quickly, but let's go back and saw that there was a get customers. You can see that right there, and that returns a list of customers. Now, that's the thing that'll get converted to an observable collection, as we talked about. The customers are coming from the Entity Framework 4 model. And they have a first name and a last name, but there is no way to get them both together
right.
in the object itself.
So if you want a full name, there is none.
There is none. Now, we could go in and we could add full name into the entity model.
Sure.
And we could actually write the code to take first and last and, you know, put it together and all that. We're going to assume, though, in this case, that we maybe can't change the service or we don't want to change it. It's working great. We don't want to mess with things. And so we're going to do it on the client side to show how we can kind of get away with that. In a Silverlight app.
And that's important because a lot of times on the client side, you want to be able to do something for the model that's not business specific or service specific. You're doing it for the UI.
Exactly.
So you want to do that in the client.
Yeah, it wouldn't be any read because otherwise it's going to send full name over the wire every time.
Right.
And we already have first and last. Why not just do that on the client side?
Exactly.
I agree. So what I'm going to do is just we'll right click and add a new class. And the class, as you saw, is called Customer. Now the proxy. You can see right in there, already generated a customer class. So we're going to call this customer.cs. We'll go ahead and add it in. Now the namespace, I want it to match the namespace of the actual proxy,
right?
Which would be Silverlight customer viewer dot I type that right, dot customer service dot proxies. And we're going to want to make this partial. I'm going to need a fix. This doesn't like something about the namespace. So here's what we'll do. Let's go ahead and we can actually go into the proxy. And let's just take a real quick look.
Yeah, you go into reference.cs, and that's where the customer class exists.
And this should be it right here. So
we'll copy the same namespace.
Let's go ahead and just let me do it the way I copy. Control C is much easier than fun in the menu. All right, and that's our namespace that the proxy generated. In fact, you'll see there's customer.
And again, pointing this out, you only see this because you did show all files.
That's right. You wouldn't see that. And normally you don't have to go in there, but apparently I have, I don't know, a typo or something in my namespace. So we'll go back over to customer, and let's paste this one in and see if it'll, there we go. There we go. As long as customer's not red, we're good.
Right.
Now, the reason we're making it partial is, if you noticed in the one I just showed, it was partial as well. And so we want to kind of slap those two together at compile time.
So part of it's defining the generated code, which you don't want to change that generated code file because it'll get overwritten.
That's right.
So you're doing it over here in your own file.
So I'm just going to come in and we're going to do a public string, and we'll call it full name. And then we'll do our standard get block. We don't need a set. But in the get block, I just want to return first name plus last name. And, you know, we could do string.concat or whatever you like, but
sure.
Regardless, we just want to put those together. So that's it, though. Now what we've done, in essence, is taken what the proxy generated for us, which was that customer class we just looked at, and now we're going to add in a new property, but as you said, it's only on the client side.
Okay, and we'll use this to show up inside the combo box?
Yep, and that's ultimately we're going to bind to that property.
Okay.
In the combo box, exactly. So, okay, so now we're pretty much ready to go. Let's just I'm a big believer in build often, so
yes.
Let's go ahead and we'll just build before we get much further. Make sure everything shows up properly here. And yeah, we're going to get to that. We're going to add an update and a delete button click, so no big deal.
So you have some buttons that think they have handlers, but they really don't.
Yep, those are back in here. So we can actually, we're going to do that at the end of this, but let's go ahead and add those handlers.
So
you'll notice
we can
just double click it just like you would in Windows Forms. Very nice. And we'll add that code a little bit later. So let's try that one more time. And once this builds, we'll now go in. Looks good. And now what we want to do is we want to get data from this proxy into the combo box.
Okay.
So, you know, what do you do though? How do you know when it's ready to go? And we could put it in the constructor. After initialized component though, but I normally like to put that in either the loaded event, very similar to the form load, form loaded, or if you're doing a navigation application, there's a on navigated too we could do. But for this one, we're going to do the following: we're going to make a loaded, do our tab, and get that guy in, and we'll take out that little piece.
So why would you do it in loaded versus the constructor? Maybe it's important to talk about, you know, when things are actually loaded.
Yeah, so usually if you do it after initialized component, you're generally, I found, pretty safe. But yeah, you want to make sure that everything's, your loaded is your official signal that, hey, I'm ready to go.
The UI has been rendered, it's in the visual tree, we can actually stick data in here.
Exactly. And like I said, there's stuff you can get away with in here too, but I don't know, I'm one of those play it safe people and like to do it when I know it's ready.
It's easier, let the UI tell you it's loaded, then actually start going into your data.
Yep.
Now, it's not like saying you can't get your data in the constructor. You just, sometimes you can't display it.
That's right. You want to make sure everything's ready to go, your combo box has been rendered, and any children, and yeah, all that stuff. So we're going to go ahead, and I'm just going to give it a really obvious name of proxy, and our service, if we look over here, is customer's service. So it should be something like customer's service client.
Right.
And I'm going to go ahead and, well, we can have it resolve it here. So we'll say
it should find the using statement for
customers
us.
Service client, and then we'll try to resolve that. And I'm not seeing.
I think it wanted a customer service client.
Is it customer?
Yeah.
Let's try that. Yep, you that are right. Good call. So we'll go ahead and make the proxy. Now I mentioned earlier when I showed the advanced box, everything in Silverlight by default is asynchronous.
Mm-hmm.
So what we're going to do is, before I actually call, you'll notice when I want to call get customers. there is no, you'll notice there's get customers async, but no get customers.
Right.
And the reason for that is that the get customers that we see here has to be async. That's just how it works in Silverlight.
And on the server, there is just a get customers. But what happened here is the service reference proxy generated both the async and the completed methods.
That's right.
Right.
That's right. So before I actually call it, though, I need to say what's the callback. Mm-hmm. I need to wire that up. It's always wise to tell it that so you don't have timing issues. So we're going to say get customers async, but there's a get customers completed. So we're going to do another...
get customers completed.
Oh, I do. Thank
yeah.
you.
Plural.
Completed plus equals tab tab. And we'll go ahead and get rid of our throw there. Okay, and then that'll be our callback. We'll come back to that in just a sec.
Yep. And that doesn't actually call anything. It just says when you're going to do the next statement, this is where you're going to go.
Yeah, I always explain it like I call you, you're busy on the phone, you say, I'll call you back when I'm ready.
Mm-hmm.
And that's exactly what that does.
Is that why you do that?
Well, you know.
Oh, okay.
All right, so we'll call get customers async. And then when it calls, what we want to do is in this case, we're going to keep it pretty much like you would do with Windows Forms, keep it fairly straightforward. There are other ways to do this, which we'll cover in the MVVM lab, the data binding lab, and things like that. But we're actually going to write code to do binding. So you'll notice the name of my combo box, once it loads here, is customers combo box. In fact, I'm just going to grab that so we don't have any S issues.
Exactly.
And we'll come into here. And now we're going to say customers combo box dot, and instead of data source or items or something like that, it's called item source. So we're going to say item source equals.
Two S's this time, just in case.
Just in case. Yeah, there you go. And notice we're getting back a get customers completed event args, otherwise known as E. So we're going to do E dot.
The yard is formerly known as E.
Right. E dot result. And if you mouse over result, you'll notice we get an observable collection of customers.
So it's strongly typed for you.
Strongly typed, all ready to go. Now, if we run this as is, assuming everything works, and it shouldn't work the first time, actually, which I'll explain, but it's going to actually write out the type, meaning long namespace dot customer, because we didn't tell it what property that the combo box.
We just said there's a bunch of customers in here, but we didn't tell it what you want. I mean, it could be age, it could be first name, it could be
anything. And it's, unfortunately, we're not at the age where we can guess yet.
Right.
So, yeah, that would be bad. So we're going to come into here, and there's a display member path property we're going to get into right there. And if you recall, we had a customer. We had a full name.
How convenient.
How convenient. You'd think we almost planned this before
You'd think.
We started.
But if he knew us, you know we didn't.
Yeah, right. So we'll come into full name.
And of course, we can do this in the XAML too, but just easier in the property page.
A little easier on this. Doesn't save us a whole lot, but we can come into full name, yeah, or we can come into XAML. That's actually what it just did. Here's my combo box, and if we scroll probably way over to the right here, there it is.
Right.
So it just added that right there. Okay, now, a problem will come up, and it's not related to anything we've done so far. It's the fact that this service here, if I run the SVC file,
mm-hmm.
let's look at the port. And this was kind of strategically put in the lab exercise by default so that people are aware of this, because in a real enterprise app, it's not always so simple that you have the Silverlight host page in the same project as your web service.
Right.
So you'll notice up here, what's our port? 37989. All right, nice long one. Well, Silverlight itself is in a different project, and therefore when it gets served up, if we run, well, here's the page we'd run actually, that's going to get a different port for that project,
right?
And we will get an actual cross-domain exception.
Right, and if you're running one port versus the other, it's just like running two different websites, like in danwalling.com or johnpapa.com.
Exactly. And so what will happen is Silverlight, because it's a very secure environment, runs in a sandbox. If you call back into the same domain where it was served up, which would be this project, you can see our zap file, which is our Silverlight file, that what we use for deployment. When I run this, we're going to get a different port. It's going to try into the call, you know, like me calling you,
right.
But we're in different areas. Our phones aren't compatible, put it that way.
It's called a cross-domain call, right?
Yep.
So if you try to do that, it's going to say, no, you can't do this.
Exactly.
But there's always a way around it.
There always is a way around it. So you'll notice in the lab exercise, we'll have you go in, and you're just going to simply rename this clientaccesspolicy.exclude. So we'll come into here, and we'll say .xml. And let's go ahead and open that just really quickly. So this is a file you need to put any service that wants to expose itself to a Silverlight client from a different domain needs to have this, or there's another one you can use as well called crossdomain.xml. Mm-hmm. But this is client access policy. This is Microsoft's official Silverlight cross-domain file.
Right.
We're allowing any call to basically anything from the root down in this project, and there's our service. That's why we did that. Even subpaths. Now you can go in and tweak all kinds of things in here. We won't.
And
get
you should
into that.
Make it as secure as you only as you need it.
Lock
reality.
It down as much as possible. Like in this case, I really don't need subpaths, so technically we could turn it off. But we're gonna just go with the default.
You can allow HTTPS, HTTP. You can say specific domains. In this case, it's every domain.
Yep. You can even have multiple domain tags.
So this again is just to reiterate. It's a way to say my web service can only be communicated with from Silverlight clients that are on these domains or using this particular protocols.
That's right. Exactly right. So, I think it's a good feature. I mean, yeah, it can be annoying if you don't own the. Looks like I have a thing in there. If you don't own the actual service,
right.
It can be a little trickier that way. But in an enterprise scenario, you know, it's something you can work with.
You're right. This is for when you're writing your own services.
Exactly. So, all right, let's go ahead and there's our file. So now it's in place. So now, if everything was aligned properly in the world, let's go ahead and do a build just real quick. And when we pull it up, it'll take a little bit of time the first time. It's the moment of, sweat here. But
it's
looks
up
like
the
we build.
Instances.
So I think the service is already running. So we're going to go ahead and hit this little test page. Now that was generated, this and the ASP.NET was generated for us. And then when we compile the Silverlight project, we get this ZAP, which is referenced by those pages.
Right.
So let's go ahead and try it out. And this should go in and hopefully fill up the combo box. Like I said, it'll take a little bit of time first time it runs. And had we not had that cross domain, I mean, we may get an error anyway, but we definitely would have got an error.
Right.
Had we not had that in there. So let's see. All right, and there we go. So we have our customers in there. You'll notice now as I click on them, it automatically fills the text boxes. And this is a text block right here with the data. And the reason for that is we've already kind of predefined some bindings, which I'm going to show real quick on how we can say, hey, I want to bind these text boxes up to the selected item of mm-hmm. the combo box. Much like you would do actually in Windows Forms. It's just in Windows Forms you would typically write that code. You could use the properties as well to do
we
it.
We could use code to do this, but it's a lot easier with the bindings.
A lot easier. The nice thing, because in Windows Forms everything is code-centric. That's just kind of how it's built. Mm-hmm. And in Silverlight you can do it in code if you want, or you can do it in XAML. Either way. All right, so let's go ahead and look at those real quick, and then we'll wrap up with the update and delete functionality. Okay, so I'm going to switch over to Design View and demonstrate a newer feature that's in Visual Studio 2010. So we have a text box here, and this particular text box obviously bound to first name, last name, and you know the different individual properties.
Right.
So I'm going to right-click and go to Properties. We're going to come down to the standard text property. You'll notice there's this little database-looking icon, which means we've already been bound. So if I click on that guy, or this one over here, we can say apply data binding. Let's go ahead and pop that up. And you'll notice that the source of the binding is an element, which in essence what we're saying is all those little tags we see in the XAML are elements, tags. We're saying we want to bind to an element called customer's combo box. That's the source of the data.
This is the way we bind this control to something else already on the page.
Exactly. We could have made it where if this combo box didn't have all our data, mm-hmm. when the selection change fired, we could have called the service again, but we already have all the customer data, so why not use it?
Right. The customer, even though the first name, last name, the full name's in the combo box displayed, it actually has access to all the customer data.
That's right. That's right. Which fortunately, if you're coming from a Windows Forms background, is pretty much how it works.
Right.
There as well. So. I'm going to go to the path. Now we have to say what property do we want to bind to. So the source, as you can see here, is our combo box. We then want to say, on that combo box, let's go ahead and grab the selected item.
Right.
And then at that point, it's an object. All right, because, you know, at this stage, the combo box just stores everything as objects. So now we're going to be very specific and say first name. Now, this won't actually show first name. I went in and typed that into the XAML because it won't reflect over that in this designer and show you the actual properties. So let me show you that real quick. We'll go to the XAML. Here's our text box. And there's several of them. So this is what it did. This is our standard binding in XAML. So we do a binding. We're going to bind the source. The element name is this guy. And then the path is the combo box's selected item. But we then need to tell it what is the property.
Right. And the only thing different in all these lines really is the name of the combo box. The name of the text box that we're linking to. And then here, the selected item for phone, email, last name,
the property. Yeah. And then this guy is one of my favorite features, which you can do in Windows Forms as well, but it's a two-way binding, which means if this property changes, the text box this is bound to will automatically be notified.
Right.
And if, you know, the user goes in and types something, then it'll automatically be pushed back into the object.
Right.
And update the property. So that's what a two-way binding is.
Right. You got one-way, you got two-way, and you got one-time.
And one-time.
Right.
Yep, which do exactly what they say.
Mm-hmm.
So the last things we're going to do to kind of wrap up here is let's go to design.
Yep, and I can see we have an update and delete click event handler already in the XAML because we double-clicked earlier.
That's right. So just to show them, that's what we're going to do. We double-click these, as John said earlier. So we'll come into here, and there's a little bit of code for this one. So I'm going to come over to the toolbox, and we're just going to drag in just a little bit of code here. And we'll do the same thing down in the delete, and then we'll talk about it a little bit. Since I know you want to watch me code it. So first thing is you'll notice we have an observable collection here we talked about earlier.
Yep, Visual Studio doesn't know what that is.
So we're going to resolve it here. The normal way would be come up and resolve. I have another product here that's doing it. So we'll go ahead and resolve that guy.
And that sticks the using statement at the top, right?
Right. And so now what we're going to do is, again, we create our proxy, just like we did before, and you could even reuse the proxy. Now, if you do reuse it, you always have to make sure it doesn't fault.
Right.
If it does, you'd have to recreate it. But we're going to assume that we're just always going to create a new instance to make sure it's always in a good state. We're going to grab the combo box's selected item, and we're then going to cast that as a customer, because that's what we bound right there, was a list of customer, observable collection. Okay, now this guy here, this change tracker, I didn't actually write that. I mentioned in the exercise one video that this is using Entity Framework 4 with self-tracking entities. So I kind of leveraged that to track, hey, what do we want to call? So you'll notice ultimately we're going to call save customer async on the update, on the delete, save customer async. Same thing.
Right.
Well, obviously, if you're going to call a single method, we need to know what state are we in. Are we deleted, inserted, updated, you know, modified?
So you have to tell it if it's an insert, update, or delete.
Exactly. And this is just a really nice feature of self-tracking entities that it adds this state with an enum. And that was done automatically for me when I generated the proxy here.
Okay.
So pretty nice. So once we do that, we're going to go ahead and we're going to wire it up. In this case, we're using the Lambda. So this is an inline method. Right here.
Just the same model we used before. We still have a completed handler and async. Instead of calling a different method, though, you're going to put the method in line with Lambda.
Exactly. So up here, we called down to this guy. If you like that better, by all means, go with it. Otherwise, I actually prefer this way because I think it keeps it all together.
That's brilliant.
Brilliant. So we're going to grab the result, which is going to be a special type of object, which we looked at in the earlier video called operation status.
Right.
That's just a custom one, a POCO, plain old CLR object I made. And that's going to allow us to check the status based on if it's good or not, true or false. We'll show a message box based on that. And then we call save customer async. We pass the customer up to the service. And if you look in the Windows Forms side of the code, you know, back into this side, almost identical. Almost identical. So.
And one of the nice things that's kind of under the covers for this, too, is that when you're looking at this code, you may have heard of things about the UI thread or the background thread when you're dealing with Silverlight, but when you use the proxy-generated classes that get created for you, it automatically puts you back on this UI thread. So what does that mean?
Means less code.
You don't have to worry about where you are. Just show your message, show your data, and it's available to the UI.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's really easy to use that way and very easy to work with. Now, the delete pretty much does the same thing.
Yep.
We're going to grab the customer. We're going to set it to deleted state. We call or hook it up. We're going to give a message box based on what happened, and then we officially do it.
And the op status is your object that comes back.
That's my property.
So really,
the
it's all
status.
The same code other than the message that you're going to display
yep.
and then the state.
And the state. And we could refactor that out and make
sure.
it probably even more reusable.
Anytime so. I see that, that's what I look for. Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. So,
but does it work, Dan?
I don't know if it works, but we'll try it.
And we'll just end the video right here before now.
Yeah, let's cut. All right, looks like we build, which is always a good first step. So let's go ahead and run this in the browser. And once the customers are loaded in here from the service, we have Catherine Abel. Let's change this to Abel 2. And we'll go ahead and hit update. All right, it says it worked, but, I got stuff up my sleeve here. Magic,
sure.
So.
Prove it, Dan.
Let's prove it. Let's try to reload.
And there's nothing there.
Oh, and look at that. Able 2 shows up. And there we go. And we'll just update it again, and we can delete and all that fun stuff as well. So we can come down to here. We could say delete. And
Gregory's
that one
gone.
Is now deleted.
Awesome.
So the nice thing about it is now we were able to reuse all that code we had for our Windows Form app, and we didn't have to reinvent the wheel. We now moved into a mode where we can deploy it through the web. Later labs, we'll talk about out of browser. There's all kinds of options there. So,
really, the only difference is using WinForm and Silverlight from what you're showing in this example to migrate is you could get away with that with some minor changes to the UI. The XAML is a little different, but again, you can drag from the toolbox. I don't know if we showed the toolbox or not, but you can drag from the toolbox onto the designer.
Yep.
If we pop that guy open.
There's the toolbox.
Same as you have in Windows Forms, just a couple different controls. You can create your own group box if you want to using a rectangle. That works as well. And then obviously the asynchronicity. Asynchronicity, is that a word?
I think it's a movie.
Async. Sounds like a new album that you can come out with. So we can work with async properties basically, so you can call these methods and bring them back because you don't have synchronous methods.
Right.
Unless you use the new keywords there. Talking about at PDC.
Yes.
Async.
Upcoming.
But we digress.
Upcoming. So, yeah, so that's a wrap up. So, I think the big takeaways, we've all been in the position, both of us, of learning this. And while XAML is a little bit different, you could have designed this entire thing without ever seeing the XAML.
Right.
The only time you would have had to is on the data binding, we type in the property. So, other than that, it'd be pretty simple. So for me, it's a little bit of a learning curve getting started with this, but I would recommend just use the designer as much as possible and then kind of learn the XAML along the way.
Yeah, I like to use the designer, and then as I'm learning, go look at the XAML, see what it generates just to get an idea so you get comfortable with that.
Exactly. Right. So that's a wrap on how you can convert Windows Forms over to a Silverlight app.
And that's lab number one, moving from WinForms to Silverlight, and we'll see you with lab number two.